Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Tuesday, September 17th. I'm Lisa Music reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Humboldt's budget deficit prevents funding for valuable street services. A community conversation, Let's Talk event series on Palestinian-Israeli conflict, and Noyo Center project moves forward at City Council meeting. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. This morning, around 10:45 a.m., residents noticed a gathering of law enforcement vehicles at Tubi Park, located off Sproul Creek Road, just west of Garberville. The lineup reportedly included Humboldt County Sheriff's deputies accompanied by a skid steer, indicating that members of the marijuana enforcement team, MET, were present. Witnesses described the deputies engaging in what looked like a strategic briefing. Subsequently, some vehicles were seen moving towards the Garberville Airport, indicating a potential shift in focus or continuation of today's activities. Another group of law enforcement vehicles were seen in the Carlotta area this morning. That activity is reported to be led by the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. This law enforcement activity coincides with the onset of the fall harvest season, a critical time for local cannabis growers. Additional information has been requested from the law enforcement agencies involved. The Humboldt County Grand Jury's recommendation to fund a well-known street outreach services program won't be taken up due to a budget shortfall. Daniel Mintz reports.
A Humboldt County program that brings mental health services to the streets won't get additional funding despite a grand jury recommendation for it because of a budget deficit. Though the Board of Supervisors agreed with all the grand jury's findings, a $15 million budget deficit prevents acting on its key recommendations. The report was reviewed along with others at the board's September 10th meeting. It focuses on the county behavioral health branches Mobile Intervention Services Team, or MIST program, which has gone through several incarnations as various sources of funding, including Measure Z public safety tax funding, were gained and lost. Now a partnership between the county's Department of Health and Human Services and its sheriff's office, the expiration of a grant leaves MIST with only partial Medi-Cal funding. The report says there is now, quote, a funding gap that needs to be filled. But contrary to the grand jury's recommendations, the county won't be filling the gap anytime soon. Public information specialist Cadi Gallardo told supervisors MIST has unique value, but the county's budget is uniquely lean.
Additionally, it is recommended that your board does not implement the following recommendations to provide permanent funding for MIST to cover services that cannot be reimbursed by Medi-Cal no later than July 1st, 2025, and provide sufficient funds to continue the MIST program unless other funding for the program is secured prior to the 2026-2027 fiscal year to be completed no later than April 1st, 2026. The county's current budget situation makes it difficult to allocate funds for MIST services that are not reimbursable by Medi-Cal. Additionally, the county anticipates challenging budget years to come with an ongoing budget deficit and no anticipated substantial increases in discretionary revenue sources. Therefore, the county is not in the financial position to commit to funding MIST by the civil grand jury's deadline of April 1st, 2026.
Supervisors largely disagreed with an additional grand jury report focusing on the County Child Welfare Services Office of the Ombudsperson. Created as part of a 2018 legal settlement with the state, the Office of the Ombudsperson responds to complaints and independently reviews CWS policies and practices. The grand jury finds that the county regularly and systematically violates the settlement terms, but Gallardo said the settlement is being complied with, as confirmed by outside agencies.
It should be noted that the Attorney General stipulated that Humboldt County CWS has fully complied with and completed most of its obligations under the agreement, and with those remaining obligations to be monitored by a third-party compliance monitor. That monitor is the California Center for Rural Policy at Cal Poly Humboldt, and they found that CWS has completed all outstanding actions under the areas of the stipulated supplemental judgment at the close of their monitoring period. Furthermore, CWS has gone far beyond the mere terms of the judgment and has used the opportunity of the judgment to build infrastructure that deepens the department's responsiveness to issues arising in its caseload, strengthens collaboration with external vested parties, and increases accountability to its mandate and to the community.
Supervisors approved a response that disagrees with most of the grand jury's findings and recommendations. A third grand jury report probes the county's hiring processes and finds that, quote, many departments continue to be short-staffed, and as of 2020, county pay levels are low relative to similar counties. Supervisors agreed with the majority of the findings, but Gallardo noted that salary negotiations in 2021 and 2022 yielded salary increases of at least 7.5%, with sheriff's deputies getting 10% increases. Gallardo said some of the grand jury's recommendations have been implemented. Others can't be implemented by the report's deadlines due to budget conditions. During the board's discussions, MIST was described as important but financially challenging, as reflected in comments from Supervisor Natalie Arroyo and Board Chair Rex Bone.
The MIST team has been incredibly valuable, and I agree with our response, and I understand what the constraints are. And on all of these topics, I think we've taken a measured and appropriate response, and there's always a lot we need to do to serve a really complicated and difficult and hard to serve community in many ways. And, so I think this captures the idea of continuous improvement while also recognizing what our constraints are that we're really facing.
Again, I want to thank Child Welfare Services for everything they're doing. I don't see much to change. There are, as Supervisor Royal said, 6:30 this morning on Broadway was not a pretty sight. So there's so much more work to be done along all of these lines.
Supervisors unanimously approved the staff recommendation responses to the reports. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Metz.
This week, the Let's Talk event series invites Humboldt County to engage in meaningful discourse on the complex Palestinian-Israeli conflict. Set across three evenings at various locations in Eureka and Arcata, this community gathering aims to explore this significant topic through diverse perspectives. Featured speakers from local educational institutions, religious communities, and civic leaders will offer brief insights, followed by group discussions designed to deepen understanding and foster dialogue among attendees. This event not only aims to educate, but also to bridge gaps between different community members through informed conversation. KMUD News' Lauren Schmidt sat down with one of the event's organizers to discuss the upcoming series.
Hi, my name is Naomi Steinberg. I'm a rabbi, and I serve Bnei Haaretz, the Jewish community in Southern Humboldt, and also Temple Beth El in Eureka. And for 10 years, I had the pleasure of teaching in religious studies at HSU, now Cal Poly. So that's kind of who I am, and I make music with my wonderful son, Beryl, and Jewish storytelling with our show, The Angel's Wings.
With the ongoing war between Israel and Hamas, the tensions here in the U.S. have risen, impacting Jewish and Palestinian citizens of the U.S. When asked how the past year has been here at home for the Jewish community, Rabbi Steinberg said,
I don't want to complain because my personal life is beautiful. I'm blessed with a safe home, a wonderful family, wonderful employment, great community. But my heart, my heart has been so broken. The tragedies that are unfolding now that have been going on since October 7, all of that could have been prevented. None of it was inevitable. There were always opportunities for peacemaking, for resolving the conflicts. in a way that would enhance life for everyone. There were so many missed opportunities. Historians will argue about who missed the most opportunities, which side was most in error. But the reality is that it didn't have to be this way. It's very shocking. And I'm very, very concerned about the impact on young people, young Jews, young Palestinians, young Israelis, and Jewish Americans, Israeli Americans, Palestinian Americans. It's a terrible, terrible heartache and a shock to see this going on. So I have tried to just do my best to stay well informed. I've studied the conflict for many years. So I'm one of the people who was not surprised by the outbreak of a new round of war. Sadly, I was expecting something pretty bad to happen, but it's so much worse than my wildest dreams. The brutality of the October 11 massacre in Israel and the huge loss of life in Gaza, the huge destruction of infrastructure and homes, and of course, the fate of those Israeli hostages that capture the heart of the world. It's so horrible to have people held hostage and follow their plight. So it didn't have to be this way. And I'm really interested in having our community here in Humboldt be able to talk about these painful issues without just yelling at each other from opposite sides of the street or disrupting city council meetings or taking our pain out on one another. That's what I'm very concerned about. And as a Jewish leader here in the United States, I focus on matters of ethical behavior and peace and justice. That's my whole life as a rabbi.
With a national spotlight on the Cal Poly Humboldt protests that happened this past spring and ongoing division of local community members, Rabbi Steinberg and her cohorts decided to create an event that could provide a space for open dialogue and hopefully healing.
In the spring, I had the pleasure of giving a guest lecture at a class at College of the Redwoods taught by Austin Roberts, who's formerly one of my students and then went off and got his PhD in teaching religious studies and philosophy at CR and at HSU. And speaking to his class in the spring, of course, I had to address the war because it has so much impact on us. The class was about Jewish religious traditions and practices, but of course, we're impacted by current events. And after class, I said to Austin, I really want to do some kind of forum or gathering, some educational setting to bring people together to talk, because the protests at Cal Poly were just, you know, just winding down at that time I was giving this lecture. And it was such a traumatic experience for so many people who live in Arcata to have that kind of anger and hostility in the community. And the students were very passionate about what they were doing. I'm sympathetic. I was a student, you know, during the Vietnam War. And it was shocking to wake up and hear about terrible death tolls, you know. So I admire student activism. Some of the slogans the students used were so hard for members of the Jewish community to hear, and they were interpreted as anti-Semitic. And then, as we all know, unfortunately, former President Jackson at Cal Poly mismanaged the situation so badly. I feel that law enforcement was used in a very inappropriate way, and I hate to have our hardworking police officers' time wasted in any way. Those resources are precious to us. And it was a shocking scene to have hundreds of law enforcement there to arrest 30 people sitting on the floor peacefully with their arms linked. So much turmoil. And the turmoil, of course, had begun in those city council meetings last fall. So Austin and I looked at each other. We said, let's do something. We called our colleague, Professor Sarah Hart from Cal Poly, who teaches up there in religious studies. And let's get together. We called a few other faculty folks. And I also had the opportunity to meet Keith Flamer. Dr. Flamer is the president of College of the Redwoods. And he independently had come up with the idea of doing something in the fall to address the issues. And so he gave this idea his full support and gave us a wonderful young administrator from CR, Dr. Kinte Johnson. And so we also got Maxwell Schnurr from the communications department in Cal Poly. And the five of us have been working together very hard all summer to develop this forum that we're calling Let's Talk About Palestine and Israel, a Community Conversation. Our hope is simply to get people together so they can have dinner, and then we'll have brief presentations and then lots of discussion, facilitated discussion around the dinner table, so that people simply can talk to each other and we can establish a new mode in the county of talking, not yelling, discussing, not just vitriolic arguing, and really listening to each other, because we're a small community. And personally, I don't think anything that we do here in Humboldt County has any impact whatsoever on the war, except voting for the right people in federal and state government and making generous donations to organizations on the ground in the Middle East who promote peace and take care of humanitarian concerns. But the signs, the posters, the arguments, the letters to the editor, what we do here has, I would say, it's negligible direct impact on them over there, but it impacts the quality of our life and the nature of our social fabric. And we want a cohesive, close-knit community so we can talk to each other and tackle all our local problems in an effective way. So this issue has been painful. It's been divisive. Jewish members of the community have felt that there's been anti-Semitism in it. Palestinian and Arab members of the community have felt marginalized and vilified as if they're all terrorists. And a lot of people in the middle are totally confused. So our real goal is to have people join a community conversation and walk away having made new friends and having had conversations with people they may never agree with, but to learn to respect different points of view.
Though local activism may not sway international politics, what we can do locally, Rabbi Steinberg said, is what we should be asking ourselves as community members.
Yes, and we need to start with ourselves. Who are we to preach peace and reconciliation and negotiation over there if we can't do that here at home? And of course, as a religious leader, I pretty much dismiss anyone who is in favor of ramping up the armed conflict. That's just not the way to do it. I want to share with you a quote from a sheikh in Israel's Negev Desert who said something quite beautiful that this caught my eye a few months ago. He's the co-founder of a group called the Abrahamic Reunion that I've been affiliated with. It's a Middle Eastern coexistence organization. And this Sheikh Khalil Albaz made this beautiful statement. He said, I quote, "As the conflict in the Middle East reverberates around the world, many in the West have fallen into the emotional traps of anger, fear, and righteousness toward the perceived other side. Exporting the conflict will not bring peace any more than it will bring victory. And the only way to reduce the flames is to learn to coexist." Isn't that great? So succinct, so right on. Some people want to export, they want to import the conflict and bring it here. It's not going to accomplish anything.
The three-day Let's Talk event series begins tomorrow, September 18th, at the Arcata Community Center.
The presentations will be quite brief. We have a wonderful crew of people presenting from Cal Poly and CR faculty, administration. President Flamer is going to speak. I'm going to speak. We also have Father Daniel London and Imam Abu Bakr are speaking to wonderful religious leaders. Reverend Molly Tate is speaking. She's quite a specialist on the Middle East, and she's a coordinator of the Humboldt Interfaith Fellowship. We've also got Rabbi Bob Rottenberg, Sean Roon, an Israeli American who lives here in the county, a former Cal Poly student, Dan Shaheen, who is a Palestinian American living here in the community. There are quite a few more. So I think it's going to be a really great, diverse group of people. And we're relying on Kathy Lee. Professor Lee taught a course at Cal Poly back when it was HSU before her retirement. The one course that they offer on the Israeli-Arab conflict. And it's a really good course. It uses the same textbook that I used in a course I taught at Temple Beth El for years. So I know Kathy personally, and I have a lot of respect for her scholarship. She's very level-headed, very fair-minded. So she's going to provide two mini lectures on the first night, a mini lecture about who controls the Middle East. What are the political forces that drive the conflict? Who are the players? Who pays the bills? What are the economic impacts of the war? And the next day, she's going to give mini lecture again, mini, I'm saying like 20 minutes, 15 minutes, on Nakba and Holocaust, how are Palestinian and Israeli communities shaped by this trauma? And then people are going to, another panel will speak to this personally. But these presentations are super brief, so we want lots and lots of time for questions from the participants. And then we break, and the main body of the rest of the evening is people sitting at their tables talking to the people they're seated by and hearing points, different points of view. So our presenters are just to stimulate discussion.
For more information, visit the KMUD News Facebook page and stay tuned to Redwood Community Radio, where we will be featuring highlights from the event series on future news broadcasts. Turning to Mendocino, the Fort Bragg City Council reviewed a coastal program amendment and development permit that, if approved by the Coastal Commission, would pave the way for significant zoning changes at the mill site. KZYX's Michelle Blackwell brings you the details.
On September 9th, the Fort Bragg City Council held a hearing on a local coastal program amendment and coastal development permit for the area commonly referred to as the mill site. The changes alter the zoning on several parcels. If approved by the Coastal Commission, the change will allow the Noyo Center to build on its portion of the site, place the Noyo Headlands Trail Systems under Parks and Recreation zoning, and change the zoning on two parcels owned by the Sherwood Valley Tribe to medium-density residential. While there was general support for the Noyo Center, several participants objected to the change in zoning for the Sherwood Valley Tribe parcel, citing a lack of communications and participation.
Well, my name is Bernadette Rappanan. I live on the reservation here. The zoning on the mill site's finally being somewhat started, but what does that have to do with my family property on the reservation? Sherwood Valley is a federal recognized tribe. My family was given scraps of the land back. What's the right does the city entitled to have to tell me what I can build on our property? Our own sovereignty nation, we have our own federal government, and we abide by that, not the city who chooses to keep us in the dark and surprised until it was completely for you. You can zone your land for the pipe dream, but just like the skunk, we are federal and don't want to be pushed around and be told what to do on our property.
Marie Jones, a consultant for the city, worked directly with the tribal government on the change.
You know, this process did happen pretty quickly because the Noyo Center submitted their application in March, and I actually had a complete application, I think, by the end of June or July. And then I started writing the staff report. The first time we went through the process, the goal was to have it approved as part of a nature preserve, and that got stopped. And so we came back with the LCP amendment. When I thought about adding the Sherwood Valley Band of Pomo property into the equation, I reached out to their tribal administrator, which is the equivalent of a city manager. We had two different conversations. She told me she would bring it to the tribal council. You know, it was a little hard for me to know how much I should reach out to the individual homeowners versus the property owner. I decided that the tribe should reach out to the homeowners rather than myself. Then I also talked with Valerie Stanley, their tribal cultural resources person, on three different occasions. She said that they've had informal conversations, but it hasn't actually gone to tribal council yet. I told her I needed to get a letter from her signed by the tribal chairman before we submit the LCP amendment. And so she said that that would be coming soon. The property owners were notified by a hearing notice going to their homes, which would have gone out to them about 10 days ago. Nobody reached out to me. Not that they should have. I maybe should have reached out to them. Was posted with the hearing notice sign, both before the Planning Commission and the City Council meeting. Before the Planning Commission meeting, that was almost a month and a half ago. That notice was placed right at their driveway. Also, tribal members were involved in the community planning process at different stages. It's always been residential. This shift from low density to medium density happened very quickly, very recently. I recognize the concern about whether or not this is part of a reservation. My understanding is legally it's not. And so they are actually required to comply with the city's zoning ordinance. It can be made part of a reservation, but that is a process that has not happened yet.
The council passed an extensive consent calendar that approved salary increases for staff and adopted an amendment to increase the 2024-2025 budget for an approximately $8 million solar project. They also entered into a contract for services to maintain the Visit Fort Bragg website and renewed the Mendocino Humane Society's contract for animal services. They authorized the city manager to contract with the city of Ukiah for dispatch services and to accept waterline easements for the raw waterline replacement project. Additionally, the council approved the strategic plan for 2024 to 2028, received an update on bull kelp restoration efforts, and declared September 15th to October 15th Latino Heritage Month. The council chose not to support Proposition 36 due to a combination of lack of information and concerns about punitive measures that were identified in the information that they have. One participant in the meeting objected to the vendor selected for the Visit Fort Bragg website.
Regarding the renewal of the contract with Idea Cooperative, I'm concerned about the cost, the specific tasks, and the deliverables of the contract. Setting up a website from scratch takes expertise and a considerable amount of time. Maintaining it takes considerably less, taking into consideration what maintenance is agreed to. I cannot see that a lot of time is put into this website on an ongoing basis. The links don't change. The print is very small and couldn't be read well on a phone. The pictures are dark and somewhat blurry. The links that open up are not the product of the Idea Cooperative, but the respective business owners. Some of those sites are outdated. There's no calendar of daily events that opens to photos, description, location, time, cost, etc. Community members should be able to submit their events for listing approval on the Visit Fort Bragg website. It'll benefit those hosting the events, the visitors that are curious about what to do and trying to schedule when they're coming here. And most of all, it benefits Fort Bragg because the people that come here have a good time and they will be our best advertisement.
In other Fort Bragg news, five people are running for the two open council seats, including incumbent Lindy Peters and candidates Bethany Brewer, Ryan Bushnell, Scott Hockett, and Melissa Salazar. One seat is being vacated by Mayor Norvell, who will take over the role of county supervisor when Dan Jarity leaves office at the end of this year. For KZYX News, I'm Michelle Blackwell.
That's all for the broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, and thanks to our reporters Daniel Mintz and Michelle Blackwell. A special happy birthday goes out to KMUD News Director Lauren Schmidt and my son, Ryan Music. KMUD News is online. You can find us at kmud.org, SoundCloud, Instagram, and Facebook. That's where you can see related stories, links, and videos. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting from the KMUD studio in Redway, I'm Lisa Music.